Cheers.
Welcome, everybody, to Live at the Hive, episode 199 or 200 takeaway one. I am
Dan Nedelko. My timing on the squirrels was not quite what it should have been today, but welcome to Live at the Hive, digital marketing from the trenches. Once again, I am Dan Adelko.
I'm Stacey DeSantis.
And I'm Justin Massio.
And today we are talking about, one, Facebook, probably a little bit more Facebook, some Instagram and some Facebook. We got outages. We've got cats and dogs getting along. We've got whistleblowers, we've got leaked documents, all sorts of fun marketing drama. Actually,
what about the tin hats? Do we have any tin hats?
Tin foil hats or tin hats? Which one?
Tin foil.
Sure.
Yeah.
All the Facebook or lack of Facebook.
Exactly. That's right. And today we are actually also going to be talking about user-centric design. So user-centric design is something that we try to practice as hard as possible. And it's got some nuances. It ties into a lot of the things that we've talked about in the past with respect to developing strong customers personas that Stacey's definitely going to be able to speak to. We talk a lot, obviously, about the design aesthetics and design patterns. That's Justin's wheelhouse. The one part that I think doesn't get discussed often enough is taking a user-centric approach as opposed to a product-centric or a business-centric approach, where you as a business are imposing what you think the correct path is onto your customers in their journey. And what user-centric design is taking the opposite approach, is understanding those customers and then developing your patterns and all of your designs around the user, their pain points, their persona, and how to solve those problems. So it's a little bit of a meta topic that we're going to be discussing today, and how that works and kind of what design is overall.
Yeah, a lot of psychology.
Yes, it is. A lot of problem solving.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh, I thought you would.
Oh, dear.
Continue, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess we could get into what's new this week. I guess we had a little bit of an outage with Facebook, right, Justin?
Yes, we did. yeah, a lot of drama behind it. There was like a whistleblower going on. I think there you go.
I'm back. I don't know. It's StreamYard. Something going on with StreamYard. It's got to be StreamYard. I don't know what's happening.
We're starting with Instagram, right? IGTV first.
Okay. So Instagram's made it official. IGTV has now morphed into Instagram video. So they're basically combining the videos and the feed videos with your IGTV videos into one format. And what's kind of interesting about this is that there are some additional updates to the trimming tools and filters. There's also now, when you preview the video in the feed, it will preview for 60 seconds. But interestingly enough, if you're boosting that post, it will only preview the video for 15 seconds. So not really a shock. We've probably seen this coming for a while. IGTV has been kind of waning. It's in popularity for a while, I think, but it's nice to see that they're trying to optimize, if you will.
Yeah, and it's good to know about the 15 and 30 seconds thing, because if someone's on a feed, you want to make sure that first 15 seconds is what's going to draw the people in then, and then you get the rest of the video after. So that's kind of good to know, those kind of like lengths of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, it's okay. And it's very in line with kind of like what we're going to talk about today, about making sure that you're catching the user's attention right away, that you're getting right into making it punchy right from the start, right, to kind of capture the user's attention so they'll want to consume a longer form video. Because generally speaking, IGTV are longer form videos, and it's a bit of a time commitment for the user. So you want to grab their attention very quickly.
Now, what is the full length of the video now that you're allowed?
Well, they just really, in this article, they just talked about the feed piece. I think you can still have that longer form. It's just that preview before you click into it to see the longer piece.
Yeah, so now it's, I think I know the boosting is 60 seconds, but my prediction, they haven't actually talked about the total maximum length, but I think it's 60 seconds according to this. I can pretty much guarantee you that within 3 months, there will be, shocker, a 60 second and a 3 minute limit. Sounds like someone else we know. Starts with a T and ends with a K. Rhymes with TikTok.
Oh.
So one of the things that they do point out, and this is actually a good admission, streamlining the video offerings in an effort to simplify the app. This has been a criticism of Facebook and of Instagram that they just keep shoving everything plus the kitchen sink inside of the app, constantly changing the user interface. You know, what is Instagram? Is it a photo sharing app? Is it a video sharing app? Is it a Reels? Is it shopping? It doesn't seem to know what it is. And I think that's actually drawing people over to TikTok, where in a sense, they've got a much more focused offering as to what it is they are in general. Right. And so I think this is definitely a move towards that, which is good because I think effectiveness of Instagram has declined as things have become just more complicated and convoluted. And, I always thought that IGTV was a bit of a, I don't know if this is a politically correct statement, but like the redheaded stepchild in a sense is this kind of weird bolt on that didn't quite make sense. And the adoption, I don't think was really all that significant.
I almost wonder if initially they were thinking, oh, this would somehow compete against YouTube from a mobile perspective. But you can't be everything to everyone. You have to really understand how people are using the app and how they're best going to be able to serve the content that people are looking for.
Yeah, and I think this goes to show like Facebook is kind of focusing on Instagram right now. Like I haven't really seen anything new installed into Facebook really big. I feel like they're putting a lot of eggs in the Instagram basket right now. They're really trying to polish it up a bit.
Yeah, well, I think it's, the kind of point of this article and the coverage here is that it's a simplification is really what it comes down to, is they're realizing that this has been far too, there's far too many things going on. There's crisis of choice. Users are getting confused. Yeah. You know, that update was occurring. I mean, every 2 weeks, Instagram was changing in pretty significant ways, which is not really great for a user, especially for lots of users. And the IGTV thing is a really good example. It's like, what are you? Are you short form video? Yeah. Are you long form video? And we had talked about this a few episodes ago that, patterns are important and usage is important, where people go to YouTube to potentially watch a 2 hour documentary or a movie even, whatever that might be. But YouTube has it built into its user patterns that, you can watch long form content here. Instagram was much more an ephemeral, right? You just scroll through your app. It's very quick. It's very satisfying. And it doesn't lend itself to longer form videos that are also typically portrait, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very weird bolt on in general. So it's going to be interesting to see. I really do think that Instagram is going to start to look a lot more like TikTok, to be honest. They definitely embrace the 9x16 format in this update. That's one of the big ones where it's like, that's the thing. So it kind of, where does video start and where do reels stop? Right.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a bit of a question too.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, they said, well, the reels aren't going to change at all. But then you're like, reels are 60 seconds too. So like, what's the difference between.
Yeah. You may as well blend in the reels.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. 9x16, 60, aren't you already doing that?
Yeah. So again, it's all very TBD. I think what Facebook is doing is a lot of this like move fast and break things kind of notion. Like let's not put together a grand master plan, but let's try a bunch of different things and see what sticks. As long as monetization goes up and user engagement goes up. We've got another couple of interesting bits of news.
So Oh, poor Dan and his Rogers connection that he suffers with every week. All right. So what was the next piece that we were going to go into here?
I think we're going to go into, now we're going to go into Facebook shutting down.
Yes. So how did you first notice that Facebook had gone dark?
I noticed from Instagram that it was all not working. And then I was like, oh, like, is it something? Oh, there. I was like, oh, is there something going on? And then I went to, I used Facebook Messenger with my friends a lot. And then I went to go send messages and that wasn't working. And then I was like, okay, something's going on. All of the above on Facebook isn't working. And then I checked actual Facebook and then I was like, okay, yeah, something bigger's happening.
Yeah, interestingly enough, my mom called me. and mom, if you're watching, I apologize, but she calls my Facebook page my website and she's like, did your website go down? And I'm like, yes, it was a little off. But you know, here we are.
Back from the interwebs. Sorry, you know what? I have a real strong feeling that this is a StreamYard issue. Because whenever I change the views, I'm getting knocked out. So sorry. So where were we, everybody?
We're just talking about how we found out about Facebook shutting down.
Oh yeah, the blackout.
Yeah.
This shook the world on Monday. So what actually happened? So, you know, there's a lot of theories as to what happened because it wasn't actually just Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp. There was a whole bunch of outages that occurred at the same time. A lot of very major players went down during that time. But the narrative is, it's called BGP routing. Basically, this is domain name services. Just goes to show you how important seemingly dry, boring things are, like domain names. It's effectively the internet's phone book, so it maps these IP addresses with different names, so you can actually type in a URL like wired.com or basecamp.com or honeypotmarketing.com. When that goes down, depending on how the infrastructure is built up, it can cause absolute chaos, which is exactly what happened.
Well, they couldn't even get back into the office.
Because the same DNS servers were used to serve their own internal systems. You know, without getting too technical in terms of what all of this stuff means, I think that there's some... this leads to... what it's led to are regulators saying, well, look, if this is the problem, then maybe you being a monopoly... A monopoly is not such a good idea, right? If this were distributed services, it wouldn't be such a big problem.
Exactly. Okay. So what's up next?
I think we had the whistleblower.
Yes, the whistle. It was interesting enough how that came about. And then right after the whistleblower testified, everything went down.
I know.
I'm going down like the Titanic. I'm going down like Facebook here.
Yeah, speaking of going down.
Am I back?
You're back.
Barely. False alarm, false alarm.
False alarm. Okay, I'm just looking. See. Oh, there we go. So, in another article that we had for What's New, they were talking about how Facebook is really growing in developing countries and how they're really investing in their network and, you know, really trying to up their services. And then they just turn around and this all failed, right? So,
yeah,
it's kind of like, you don't really want them to have the monopoly like they do. No. Okay, so
I am now back for a temporary undetermined period of time.
Okay, Justin and I are having a good talk.
Okay, you guys can also pull up the What's New articles in case I drop out. The show can go on without me. April saying there are so many conspiracies. It all seems like dominoes are falling on Facebook's end. Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. And, you know, Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, not having a great week. Obviously, everybody knows about the Facebook whistleblower, who is a product manager on the safety team, leaked thousands of documents, private documents, one of which is saying that Facebook whistleblower is claiming that company has overcharged advertisers. I kind of know this to be the case. We've actually seen this happen.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, you know, this has actually happened with Google as well, is kind of like, you know, if you want to boost up your Q3 revenues or your Q4 revenues, you add, you know, 2% to the cost of hundreds of millions of users purchasing from you. And hey, little problems are solved this way. So in all of this, yeah, Frances Haugen is her name. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the claims are pretty crazy. The company knows about, downplays its role in human trafficking, perpetuating misinformation. I think there's, you know, it's a pretty weedy, complex thing to kind of unravel in general about this. Is engagement spurred by negative sentiment? Yeah, for sure. Does Facebook want to do it? Probably not. Are they overly zealous in terms of wanting to stop it? Not at all. You know what I mean? It's kind of like they're walking this incredible tightrope around all sorts of things on those claims. But this one here is misleading advertisers for years, declining content production, reach and frequency, and overcharging Facebook on a vast scale. So that's a very different charge. Mm-hmm. So it looks like, you know, investigators will have their hands full for quite some time, because Facebook simply will not. I mean, they're not just going to sit back, right? They're going to have their legal teams all over this.
Yeah.
And again, you know, it's kind of hard to prove it, given the fact that Facebook runs the marketplace. So that's kind of like,
yeah, that's what I was going to say. They have the monopoly almost, right? So it's really hard to quantify.
Yeah.
You know?
So, I mean, I guess the kind of thing is, if you've got someone that's a fraudster or a scammer, and I'm not saying Facebook is, but you're asking the person perpetuating the thing to kind of investigate themselves or look at their own platform. You know, it's going to be really hard to prove that there was overcharging happening when they're the ones setting the price. That's my point. What does overcharging mean to Facebook? Facebook sets the price. So what is the fair price supposed to be? You know, what the claim is here is reach and frequency campaigns. So same person could have seen an advertisement on different accounts. That's assuming that everybody has, you know, multiple Facebook accounts that would cause that fraud to happen, which, I mean, I'm sure some people do, but I can't say that the vast majority of regular users or the vast majority of Facebook users actually have. I mean, I don't have two accounts, right? No. The other one here, and this again points to TikTok, I think, as a big player in this. 18 and 24 spending less time, fewer message on the platform. I mean, that's not new for Facebook anyways. But yeah. I do kind of feel like just the narrative is that even Instagram is for, I guess, what, the millennials now, or the millennials, the old people now?
Yeah.
The elder millennials.
The elder millennials is kind of the Instagram thing, and TikTok is where it's at.
Yeah, we can say, okay, millennials, instead of okay, boomer.
Yeah.
I'm joking. But yeah, no, they were saying in another article I was reading this week that Facebook noticed that everybody was going to Instagram. So in 2012, that's when they acquired Instagram. And that Facebook usage of from youth 18 and younger has been severely declining since then for the last 9 years or so. But so everybody's moved to Instagram, and now everybody's kind of moving to TikTok. It's evolving, right? And it'll be interesting to see what Facebook can do. And maybe that's why they're trying to make all these changes to Instagram to make it more TikTok friendly, to try to really bolster a youth market. But what, you know, I don't think it's really like a shocking disclosure from Francis in terms of youth and marketing. I mean, we've been talking about this with magazines forever, you know, how people Photoshop images and such and how, you know, damning that is for youth. So, I mean, it's kind of one of those thanks tips. We kind of already knew that, but I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, the reality is I think that in 10 years, the question is, you know, what, which of these platforms will still exist in any kind of impactful way. You know, Facebook's strategy has been in the past to purchase up the competitors and either fold them in or shut them down. Instagram's case, they've folded it into Instagram, but really kind of consumed the brand itself. But there's always going to be the new TikTok. Like there will be another TikTok. Like there will be, these things will happen. And the next generation is going to look at the previous one and say, ah, that's so super lame. I do think that in general, one of the problems Facebook has got is just a crisis of choice. It's just so much in one app that it's, you know, unless you're fully in, you're probably fully out, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's, you know, there's so much happening there. And that's just a danger of product development and not really understanding what you are. I kind of liken Facebook to America Online or CompuServe back in the day where it's like, don't surf the nets, like come here and we have everything for you. Interestingly enough, you know, that's a 30-year-old kind of analogy. So maybe you get it or you don't. But back in the day, you used to have to go on CompuServe or America Online. Then you would go onto the internet and, you know, if you were to look at some of the original interfaces, there's a lot in common that Facebook has with CompuServe or America Online in terms of all these different services, marketplaces, forums, and groups, and all these things, right? So what's old is new again, or new is old again, I guess.
Exactly. No,
old is new again. Yeah, that's right. All right, so we have got 13 minutes left, and we're going to make really good use of our time today because it is Thanksgiving weekend here in the Great White North. And we definitely don't want to keep our bees from getting their turkey ready or, you know, opening up that bottle of red wine, Stacey.
Oh, that bottle is going to be open soon, and George is already in my fridge defrosting, so we're ready to rock and roll.
There you go. Awesome. So let's talk now about user-centric design. And this is a bit of a meta topic, which means that, you know, we've talked about design with Justin and with Paige and with various other members. Here we go. There's a nice message from Hillary. Thanks. Happy Thanksgiving, Bees. I'm thankful for your insights into such crazy online times and your beautiful faces on social media. I know she's talking about Stacey and Justin, not this mug.
Thank you, Hillary.
Thanks, Hillary, and have a happy Thanksgiving. Poor George. George was born for this. This is George's finest hour.
He's ready to be consumed
by the
Gollinger DeSantis clan.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Fun fact, a fun story. Our friends bought a farm in Hanover, and I actually met our turkey and our cow, but I'm not going to get into that.
Yeah. During our morning stand up this morning, Dan may or may not have made me cry about this. I was literally going, really?
It was a good turkey. He's going to be a better turkey in a couple of days. Anyways, let's talk about user centric design and what that means. And I think one of the things we've talked a lot about persona development, talk a lot about customer journey. And when you get into the design phase of things, there's just a couple of quick points I want to make. Is one, oftentimes the design process is really focused on the product and the company. Design teams take several different roles. A creative director, for example, is not necessarily a person that is pushing pixels and making visuals. There may be other people on the team. The role of a creative director is really to pull in all aspects of the overall design, right? So the language and the visual and the journey of the customer. And user-centric design puts the customer first in that process and makes the business and the product take a back seat to that, okay? And the reason for that, and we talk a lot about that with copywriting, is a lot of businesses will write about themselves, how great our product is and how amazing our service is. And it ignores the pain points of the customer and how your business, your product, or your solution, in fact, solve those problems. And that would be the user-centric approach.
Exactly. They can also get a little too specky. You're very close to your product. So you could be like, oh, it has so many, you know, RPMs, or it's, you know, got, you know, a weight of such and such. And while that information will become useful throughout the journey, it's not something you should necessarily lead with.
Mm-hmm.
No.
You know?
No, and part of that, like, user experience design is like, what problem are you going to lead with to bring in more people, not just like show them everything? Like, what's that little thing that's going to bring in that person, really tailor it to that?
Yeah, exactly. The analogy, not the analogy, but the one of the best stories about
the cliffhanger.
Oh, what is he gonna say? All right, let's bring up the presentation here. All right, okay, bear with me. I'm just going to share my wee screen here. All right, so let's get into it, Justin. Okay, you want to introduce this slide?
Sure. Okay. So user-centric design is important because it improves the user experience. So things like figuring out a problem that your user is going to have and then solving it is what's going to really make the user experience better, or designing it so that they don't have a problem at all. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so smooth and gives them all the right steps that they don't even realize that this is happening, or they don't even realize that there's like an issue at all. It's just solved immediately. So it's kind of like what you're focusing on when you're saying user-centric design.
Exactly. And I think too, it's important to mention that this is an iterative process, which is just a fancy way of saying that you're not probably going to get it right the first time. You're going to come up with your best assumptions based mm-hmm. on your customer journey and your user personas, and you're going to hypothesize what you think is going to work. And then you're going to test that out. And then from testing that out, you have to really look at the metrics and the data and see how people are responding to that design. And if it's not working, understand where you need to make those tweaks or adjustments. Mm-hmm. So that way you can get smarter. It's key learning basically as you work through that process.
Yeah, and part of that is like make sure that you're kind of recording what's happening, right? Because like a lot of things you can kind of just post it out and you're like, okay, like I assume this and this, but you kind of write it down and be like, okay, I did this time, that's what I did differently here, this is what's working, that kind of thing. Make sure you're kind of like recording it that way. I find it really helps when you're designing this way.
Okay, hello everybody, I'm back.
Hi, hey Dan.
This is definitely a StreamYard issue. As soon as I opened up another tab to open something else up, it went down. Just StreamYard.
I can drive the presentation if you want. Okay. That makes it easier for you.
That's cool. Yeah, yeah. So the one point I wanted to make about this user-centric design, and I kind of caught the last part of what Justin was saying, this is a great one to talk about user design impacting customers. The iPod, when it was originally released, was in a market of MP3 players, where to Stacey's earlier point about tech specs, right? It was 64 gigabytes with a rapid SSD, blah, 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 blah. Nobody really knew what they were. They weren't widely used. Technophiles like myself were using it, going on tech specs, but the average consumer was not looking at MP3 players at the time as being anything other than a novelty, right?
Exactly.
And then the iPod came out, and you know, the brilliance of the iPod was, hey, it's 2,000 songs in your pocket. And people went, oh, okay. Now, if you were a techie, you'd be like, okay, but what's the bitrate on the MP3 file? Because if you have larger bit rates, then it's going to have fewer songs. Like, none of that matters.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it got to the point where President Obama had, you know, the playlist of his life. And that was a big campaign that they had. And that product took off because they took a user-centric approach. So the user said, I just want music and I want to take a lot of it with me. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if it's 64 gigabytes or whatever a gigabyte is, and where a lot of users may say that. At the time, this is many, many years ago, I was dating a musician and she had no clue. And she said, it's just like 1,000 songs. It's all I care about. Right.
Yeah.
And a really good litmus test for saying that's a user-centric approach. That's what the user cares about. Apple obviously cares about whether it's 32 or 64 gigabytes at the time, whatever it might have been. 8 gigabytes, I think, was one of them too. But that's a really great example of learning how to take things from a business and product-centric approach to a user-centric approach.
Exactly. Yes. And I think it's useful to mention too, at that time, before you had an MP3 player or an iPod, the only way you could listen to music was like on a CD-ROM.
Yeah,
Walkman. That you would carry with you. And if you ran or you did any kind of activity, it would skip. And so then Apple comes out with these commercials and the person's listening to music, but they're dancing, they're moving, they're doing all the things that would typically skip that CD-ROM that you're carrying, right? Or the Walkman that you're carrying. So it just goes to show with the design, it wasn't something overt with the copy. It was also just like intuitive, like, oh, I could actually, you know, listen to 1,000 songs and move around like nobody's business. Rock on, you know what I mean?
Yeah, with the smaller headphones at the time, because that was a big deal when that came out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you're looking at your product, and Stacey, maybe we can skip over up to the customer, creating a customer, a user journey map or a customer journey map. I think that one's pretty important there.
Okay.
Yeah, this is really visualizing what you need to do.
Yeah, so this one here is a user flow that looks at the various different branches of logic that could be put in place. But if we go to the next slide, what we're going to see is something that's pretty interesting here. And this is an extension of the persona. So you develop those personas and you really talk to customers, like really interact with customers and leads and understand. You can do this through short video calls. You can do it through surveys. You can do it through NPS surveys. There are platforms like delighted.com. Heck, you can go and interact on social media and look at comments about your product or your service or your competitors and learn a lot. Mm-hmm. This customer journey map, though, and this is kind of an interesting point of conversation that we were having, was the website is not the only part of the customer journey. And I think that's one of the most important things to take into account, in the same way that design is not just graphic design. Design is communications design. It's journey design, patterning design. It's all of those things.
Well, it's even there was a update where Google is no longer attributing like last click or last ad attribution because they understand that that's typically not to give all the credit to that last ad that clicked through is not a realistic barometer, because typically a user will not just go right to the ad and click through. They'll have done their research. They will have looked at the details of the product. They will maybe have asked a couple friends, and then they see that and they're like, okay, now I'm going to do it. So they're even Google's like readjusting how we're looking at this, right? So,
well, you're going to trigger me about last click attribution, because of all things in the universe that bug me more than anything, and one of the biggest issues I have when discussing things with clients, is that last click attribution is still the number one attribution model that most businesses use, and it is completely inaccurate. It is utterly and completely inaccurate.
Yeah.
And if you have last click attribution saying, oh, we've done all this other stuff. So if you look at this map here, I'll just finish my point about that, about last click attribution.
Sure.
Is all of the elements in your design system. So you design a system as a business, website, it's social, it's communications, it's video, it's all of these things put together into a pattern. There's a great hat that says God is a designer, whether, you know, whatever your religious beliefs are. But if you think about Mother Nature is a design pattern, ecosystems are design patterns, same thing. So last click attribution really tells you nothing. And in fact, it's going to completely skew your information and your results. You're going to make bad decisions based on last click attribution results, because you don't know how much your social efforts have been impacting your your overall business performance. And when you shut one of those things off and go, oh no, business has dropped, you start to see in a painful way how time decay and assisted conversions and assisted attributions, how everything works together, really plays into the final result, right? So just looking at this customer journey map, there is somewhat simplified, but basically if you look at this visual here, what we have is, and one of the most important things to keep in mind is the before state and the after state. And really what we're looking at is you know, over here is a before state in a sample customer journey and an after state into a area of satisfaction. That's the simplest way to look at how you frame your product or your service. Are you providing something that takes your customer from that pain point to the resolution of that pain point, right? Mm-hmm. All the best products in the world, the most successful, do this very effectively. But as you can see here, and whether you can see it very well or not, probably TBD, but we are talking here about awareness in terms of word of mouth, social media, Google searches, customer reviews, you know. So that customer journey map is often thought of as the previous slide, where we can go back there. This is definitely a component in it, right? This is really the web interaction and the marketing automation.
Definitely part of it, yeah.
It's a part of it, but it's a part of it as a component where your social would be very similar to that. Your email marketing would be similar to that. Your outbound and inbound calling, any live events you do, they're all part of that journey. Okay.
Cool.
So let's go to the next one here. I don't know. Justin, Stacy, was there anything else you wanted to add on that?
I just think that it's important too that your starting point, because I think that's the hardest part. People are like, well, where do I start with this customer journey? So based on your personas, you will have done a little bit of psychology, maybe some Myers-Briggs, you know, understanding of what the motivators are for that particular persona. So are they an extrovert, someone that would typically look for reviews and such, and or talking word of mouth kind of interactions, or are they more introverted and very research orientated? So by understanding what those personas are and kind of the psychology of that person, you can make some really great hypothesis on where to start and what those initial pain points would be for that user. So that way you can work through that process from taking them from the beginning state to the end state. Another point I'll make is this is not, I just make it once and walk away and it is the Bible or, you know, whatever. You know, it's not set in stone, basically. It is something that is constantly being updated, probably quarterly if that works for you, but you're looking at what is working, what isn't working, and then from that those data points, making those adjustments through the journey. Because I think a lot of people, they go to all the work to make the journey, the persona, and then they kind of say, okay, well, this is what it says. Well, you're making initial guesses, so you're making an initial educated guess, but that doesn't mean that that's just the way it's going to be.
Yep. Absolutely. And I think one of the important things there is the idea that, and whenever we do a web project with a client, they say, you know, when is the website done? It's never done. It should never be done.
Never.
Part of your marketing teams and your own marketing efforts need to be into constantly looking and adding points for customer feedback, for lead feedback, for, well, the almighty engagement, right? Like we talk about that with social.
Exactly.
Where the vanity metric is a follower that, you know, you can see Facebook pages that have 2 million followers and they get, 100 engagements per post. It's like, okay, so your vanity metric is way out of whack with your engagement metric, and they're not really looking at that. So yes, this whole concept of constant iteration, building this idea into your team ethos and philosophy, where, you know, there are some places that will say, okay, well, we're going to do a survey Well, you should be doing micro surveys all the time, talking to people, getting their feedback. Because when you can do that, you're going to learn so many shocking things about what motivates your customers to actually participate in your product or your service.
Or what problems that happened.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to say. Like, it will. It's a lot of people just discount the negative feedback, and that is gold. That is gold because how are you going to know what you're doing wrong if you don't listen? You know, and you can take that valuable feedback and you can optimize and you can change things up and you can really make improvements to your business by listening to that. So don't be afraid of bad comments. That's actually a gift.
Yeah, it is. And it's almost like you want to try to find the path of least resistance in this one. Like you actually want to try to create that for your customers and try to like, and the resistance fine because that's you learning, but at the end of the day you want to try to find that path that they're going to have the least resistance to buy your product or wherever the goal is.
And like I said, you know, micro surveys and question, one question here and one question there that can add up, and you can progressively profile your customers. Number one, customers and leads and potential customers, they love to be heard. Anybody, it's human nature. They want to be heard, they want to have feedback, and they want to understand and know that the business they're interacting with actually, frankly, gives a shit about what it is that they're talking about, right? Nobody doesn't like to be heard. And seeing those changes coming through because you're taking this user-centric approach where you're putting that customer first is a game changer. And we have seen dozens upon dozens upon dozens. I've seen over the last 20 years, hundreds of businesses that really refuse to take that approach and say, no, you know, we're going to do it this way. And it never really comes off as a genuine brand position, right? When we talk about that. And just one thing just to throw over to Justin too is, you know, we've seen tests where we've done on social where although the branded artwork looks beautiful, it performs nowhere nearly as effectively as something that is organic and native to the platform, whether it's TikTok or Instagram or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Like it's great to have as filler in a sense, but like the real stuff that actually does really well, and it's something that you're really learning from TikTok, is like the more organic, the more real that it is, the more people relate to it. And that's what's really going to bring people there to relate to your product.
Yeah, for sure. And just to wrap things up, since I think we're pretty much at the end, well, we went 5:08, so, you know, I was probably down for 10 of those minutes today. one of the resources that you can look to from a design, excellent company, an excellent product is called The Future. His name is Chris Doe. He does come from what I would call a more traditional design background, but his videos are absolutely phenomenal. He does talk a lot about this type of thing, that design is not just how pretty the graphics are, but it's about the messaging, and it's really a package. And it's that whole package that you need to consider. Quite honestly, there's nothing as sad as I've seen as a company that's invested in a very high price, very pretty website that has absolutely no substance whatsoever. And you know, I think you definitely as a business owner or as a marketer want to take this approach, do that customer journey mapping, look at all of the touch points and really talk to your customers to pull in that data and information, and make changes based on that information, about specific types of users, right? I think Stacy pointed that out or Justin pointed it out before. It's not one persona, right? You can have several different personas that are interacting with your business that may have completely different paths to getting into what it is you're providing.
Couldn't have said it myself.
Beautiful. Let's wrap that up. I haven't even... okay, there we go. Very nice.
Oh, yeah, nice. We haven't really had any.
Well, I mean...
To be fair.
those for moments there. I am definitely going to do some IT support on my own system down here. Justin, what do you have going on for Thanksgiving this weekend?
Just a ton of family stuff. I got family lunch on Saturday, family lunch on Monday, then Friendsgiving on the Sunday. So it's going to be a lot of food, and I'm excited.
There you go. All right. And Stacy has Theodore. Is it Theodore? Yeah, it's Theodore.
It's George.
George, I've got Theodore. Right.
Yeah, you have Theodore.
All right. All right, everybody. Well, thanks so much for putting up with our technical issues and also for even being here Friday afternoon on a long weekend. We certainly do appreciate it. Hope you all have a safe and healthy Thanksgiving. If you're in the United States, you have a safe and healthy Thanksgiving next month. We will see you next week for a special episode of Live at the Hive Digital Marketing from the Trenches, where I understand we may have some special guests. Yeah. We may have some spirits and maybe some hats or something. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
Bringing back the Bees and Brews.
There we go. Yeah. Yes. That's the original name of Live at the Hive back in the day. We'll probably scare up some clips as well since we have 200 full episodes.
I actually heard that there will be a highlight reel.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. All right. Well, all right. Much to look forward to next Friday. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay safe. We'll see you next week. Same B time, same B channel. Peace.
Peace.
Bye.